With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Let's get ready to rumble!
He's the fastest man on the planet. He'd have got there, Rabbits.
Beers, beers, and more beers. I can't wait. I cannot wait.
What about Andrew King? Put him in the second. Put him somewhere. He's too good for this game.
Well, round 19 has come and gone. It seems like this year is going by faster than ever, and my results are spiraling out of control. I'm joined by a man this week, though, whose results this week were pretty good. Kane Anderson, a.k.a. Dr. Kando. How you going, mate?
I'm good, mate. And yourself?
Very, very good, mate. New to the, I guess, community, but been lingering for a long time, but I've slowly popped your head out this year. How are you finding, obviously, running the pretty infamous Turbo Hammy Cup?
Yeah, it's good. I'm enjoying it. I've been around in the community, mostly just sort of social media postings and answering questions and stuff online. But yeah, a bit more active this year, which has been interesting, and a few more podcast appearances and that sort of thing, which has been nice as well.
Plenty of big egos getting around in that group. There's obviously a lot of bragging rights to happen. And as someone that doesn't have an affiliated podcast in yourself, it'd be, I guess, good recognition for you to take it out. And you're putting yourself in a pretty good position. I think you're floating in and around that sort of 6th, 7th, 8th spot. So string together a couple of wins and you'll be definitely right in there.
Yeah, well, I'm just sitting outside the top 1,000 mark. So I'm pretty happy with that. I had a few pretty bad weeks going through there. So I'm climbing back from a 3,500 drop on one of the buy rounds. But yeah, about 1,600 and I've got 1,405 this week. So I'm looking at a slight green arrow, I hope.
Yeah, I was just going to touch on your score this week. Obviously, a fair few 75-plus scores. There is a couple of negatives. Ruben Garrick, which wouldn't be too much of a big sink, considering a lot of those top teams do have him.
Yeah, exactly.
You persisted with Jaden Brayley. Obviously, Chawn Johnson today as well looked like he was set to have a huge round. And Jesse Raymond just seems to be sort of floating around teams. It doesn't score too great, but a 47 with no real attacking stats, you'll take that.
Yeah, for sure. And look, with Brayley, I've got Harry Grant sitting on my bench and he's been there for about 9 weeks or so. So it's been a bit of a painful ride and I'm praying that he's back next week.
We do see the 97 of Joey Manu on the bench. That's got a sting to look back in hindsight.
It does a little bit, but look, it made sense. He was back to playing centre. He hadn't scored above 70-odd playing centre all season. So I was fairly comfortable with that decision, but obviously hindsight does hurt.
Yeah, that's one thing I've quickly learned from running a page / podcast. People don't care about hindsight. They just care about the results. Mate, first game of the round, Eagles going down to the Raiders 10-12. I thought this one would be a closer game than people would suspect, and the Raiders took out the Chockies. No Mitch Moses. I know he's a popular target for people to put criticism on, but I think he controls his Parramatta side really well. Without him, they do look like they're struggling a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. They were definitely not at their peak. They had a few issues going along there, and the Raiders' defense was really good. They were coming off the line really quickly, putting a lot of pressure on them, and they just couldn't get out of first gear. It was a good performance from the Raiders.
For Parramatta, though, it was the star back rowers, Isaiah Papali'i, owned by over half of the teams in Supercoach, and Ryan Madison looks to be back to his best. Were you on the Maddo train? Did you sell him? Do you have him?
No, I had him to start the year, and I sold him when he got his concussion, and I never got him back. I didn't get him back throughout the bye, which didn't really hurt me too much through that period, thankfully, but he's had a few good scores back-to-back now. But look, it would have been borderline if I played him, if I had him throughout all that time anyway. So, you know, it's not really hurting me too much.
Yeah, look, we'll talk a little bit about strategy, nothing too in detail, but just so, I guess, the people know, if I prompt you for trade questions or whatnot, how many trades do you have left coming into next round?
Two,
okay. So you're pretty limited as to what you can and can't do.
Exactly.
Yeah, so Maddo is probably not someone to target. If you have five or more trades, I'd probably look at bringing him back in. If he's playing 70-plus minutes, he's putting out those scores we know he's best at. Matto playing big minutes is definitely someone to have for the run home. He's one of those back rowers that has really good attacking stats, but the Parramatta draw is pretty horrific, and I'm not too sure where he sort of lies from that, but 72, pretty much all in base. You can't turn your nose up at that.
Yeah, exactly. And their draw being difficult is not necessarily a terrible thing for Matto. He's going to get the bigger minutes during those tougher games, and his core work is through his base. He's hit up some tackles and a couple of offloads here and there, and he'll get his 70 points. So he's a solid pick. He's definitely someone that you could run home with. You don't have to worry about trading him out or anything like that going forward. But if you were looking to trade someone in, it would depend on who you had in your back row already. If you had three solid back rowers playing already, are you going to put a reserve on Matto when you could put a reserve on another half that might go 150?
Well, that's the issue. I think if people have Tohu, Savs and I touched on this last week. If you have Tohu, there is quite a few opportunities out there. We'll touch on some of them today. I mean, you mentioned selling options. If you own Clint Gutherson, I think this is the last week you can viably have him with that Parramatta draw.
Yeah, for sure. There's quite a few options popping up. And who will Parramatta got next week? It's a tough game next week, isn't it?
I think their run home includes Manly.
Oh, they've got Roosters next week, so it's not terrible.
I think they have Manly, Roosters, Storm, Panthers. Like, they have a pretty gross draw.
It's pretty gross. The issue with the fullbacks at the moment is Teddy's had one good game in a row, but is it going to be more than one? Pat didn't look very flash throughout the weekend on his little stint. Ponga, who knows what he's going to put out from week to week. He's had sternum injury on the weekend as well, so
Latrell goes in and out of games, can go missing, can go for a 15. Exactly. I mean, a guy that I'm very high on, Reece Walsh.
So for me, I'd just hold was Gutho. Be a struggle. If I had Gutho at the moment, I would just hold him for another week and just assess the situation with the other fullbacks.
Yeah, just see when one of the other fullbacks week. Sort of come to fruition, if they're going to cement their spot as another gun.
Exactly. Like, if Tedesco comes out and carves the Eels, then I'm not going to tell anyone to not pick Tedesco going forward.
Yeah, I mean, we see Fergo come back in. I've seen a lot of teams still have Fergo, surprisingly, considering how much he was on the bench. A 50 with attacking stats, I'd move him on. From the Eels, there's really not many other options I'd be looking at. Nathan Brown's put out a couple of okay scores, but not in that echelon of 2RFs he went coming home. For the Raiders, though, mate, Savs and I touched on Jordan Rapana being a bit of a pot option. Then he was named at fullback this week, which improved his stocks even more. Scored a 97 on the weekend, and looked really good with the ball, looked really damaging through the middle. Played similar to Tedesco in that sort of style that he moves across the field waiting for things to open up, and it really worked out for the Raiders, and he put out 97 with a side that only scored 12 points.
Yeah, he was busy. He looks pretty good when he gets to fullback in terms of involvement, how many tries and try assists and what he's going to get from that position, I'm not really sure, because Canberra don't usually use their fullbacks too well. And then you've also got to look at their last four games. In the last four games, they've got Melbourne, Manly, and the Warriors in between, and then the Roosters to finish the season. So that's a pretty
It'd be a strictly head-to-head thing, I think, with Rapana. You mentioned the Raiders fullbacks, and I know that all to that well. Bailey Simonson went off for 130 in his first game at fullback. I jumped the bullet, bought him in, it went downhill ever since. Mate, sure. Corey Hadawira-Naira, a lot of teams have him. A lot of teams were worried about him and his output, but a fantastic game last week and a quietly good one this week with 88.
Yeah, he's doing well. His offload is going nuts at the moment, which is obviously good to see. And his attacking stats are always just around the corner.
Joe Tarpany had, I think, about 50 tackles and about 18 hit-ups, pretty much all in base. The problem with him is getting the minutes. Hudson Young is going to be competing with Elliot Whitehead when he comes back. Look, the only saving grace for the Raiders moving forward is I really want to see Tom Starling start, hopefully, and that's a move for sort of next year more than anything. But I think they've got a good cohesive side. A side that isn't really cohesive right now, the Knights 8, the Roosters 28. With the first half that the Knights had, they had the wind at their back. They didn't really use it the best, and the second half kicking was poor, and the Roosters came over the top with Teddy with a 146, as you said. Cecilia Tupanul with a 125, Joey Marnie with a 97. Victor Radley, a guy that I've been pretty high on, 86. I think he helps Teddy massively, mate.
Yeah, for sure. He controls that middle really well and gives Teddy the space to not have to be around the ruck all the time. He can actually get out a bit wider and and play a bit wider and attack those edges a bit more, which is obviously better for his game and then better for his assists and better for Tupou, better for other winger.
Ikabalu. Yeah, he's now out, unfortunately.
He had a... Yes, well, he had a pretty rough weekend himself with only 23, but yeah, it's a lot better for the edges having Radley in the middle.
Yeah, you mentioned Tupou, and for owners that brought him in, I think the hype surrounding Tupou was probably 4 or 5 weeks ago. A lot of people bringing him in, and people may have jumped on the train. He's been knocking down the door, getting 50s in base with no real threat for attack. We saw it this weekend. He got an 80. With Matt Ikavalu going down, Joseph Suwali being out of the bubble, I'm not too sure who they're going to bring in with Billy Smith going down as well. I think this opens up the opportunity for Tupou and the attack that he's going to get huge.
Yeah, well, I think it's going to help with his base stats. If they're bringing in a rookie to go and play on the wing, then you've got to imagine that they're not going to be having 20 hit-ups in the game, or even 15 for that matter. Ikabalu was having quite a few. So you think that Tupou will probably be taking up a little bit more of that slack and having a hit-up pretty much every set. So... yeah, it's not too bad news for Tupou. It'll be an interesting watch to see how they line up on that right edge. They could potentially bring Morris back into centre and put Manu on the wing going forward.
Yeah, well, Manu worked well for the time that he filled in on the weekend.
Which would be great for Manu as well.
Yeah, definitely, which obviously got his attack up huge. For the Knights, mate, Jacob Saifedi bagged a try. Pretty happy to discount the score of 87. It's a bit of an outlier. He has started, has played some good footy. I don't think it's translated too huge into Supercoach. But a revitalised Connor Watson floating around, being very versatile, got a 73 on the weekend. If you've held him, pretty good signs moving forward.
Yeah, he's done well. He's been really consistent. As much as people have been looking for a way to get rid of him for all this time, his role is all over the place, but his scores are always there and thereabouts. He's doing a good job for what he's been given.
Tyson Frizzell was a huge talking point this week. The big break even put a lot of people off waiting for next week, but 54 pretty much with no attacking stats. Are we happy with that, or do you want to see more? Obviously, you see guys like Ryan Madison put out 70, or do you want to see more from Frizzell? Are you happy with the 54, knowing the attacking upside that he possesses, especially with the Knights' run home?
I do like the potential for Frizzell going forward. He had 36 tackles and only 11 hit-ups. So 11's not too bad for an edge. And 36 tackles is good. So look, that's a solid floor to have. If you're going to get 54 in floor without... Look, he had one offload. So with the run that they've got, he's going to have a lot of those attacking opportunities. And I think he's a good sideways move instead of getting your Madison that you were talking about before to get Frizzell instead, who's got a better run home, who could jag a few more attacking stats, and he's guaranteed 80 minutes.
Also, Mitch Pearce is a big inclusion for the Knights when he comes back. Yep. Brayley with a 52, Barnett with a 51. Both those guys have fallen off a cliff. No need to sort of really touch on those. Kalen Ponga only with a 50. Has lost the goal kicking, which... Look, I had him as a number 2 fullback option for the run home, but the fact that there's no goal kicking for KP really does worry me. I'll be honest, I'm not a huge fan of him as what I once was. What are your stances on him? Obviously, carrying that sternum injury as well.
As someone who has owned Ponga as the number 1 pick in 2 of my 3 drafts, I'm a bit disappointed. Losing the goal kicking is definitely a problem. That's taking... Oh, well, he wasn't always the best goal kicker, but you could...
I'd say it's a safe 10 points at least. Save 10 points.
10, 14 maybe. But yeah, that's a good chunk of points. That takes his 50 to 64, and that looks a lot more respectable, doesn't it?
Oh, exactly. And that was the point I made with Gutho, with how long Mitch Moses is out for. That takes Gutho from an 80 average to a 95 if he kicks well. Like, it's a huge thing, and people maybe not taking too much stock into it, but does have that sternum injury. Didn't look on it, really. I think the Knights struggled with him not there. And as I said, Mitch Pearce will come back and help, but the goal kicking from Clifford, I think, it really changed it. Mate, what a game this was. The Cowboys 16, the Storm 20. Who saw this coming?
I certainly didn't. I was expecting a bit of a bloodbath, to be honest.
After Jake Granville named it fullback as well?
Yes, well, that didn't instill me with confidence for the Cowboys' prospects, no.
But he played well. He obviously, 60 points in Supercoach, was dudded of some attacking stats as well. I thought he did an okay job under all the circumstances.
Yeah, so he did surprisingly well. I was very surprised that he kind of positionally wasn't too bad. His linking sweep play was pretty good. He had a try assist going down that left edge at one point, which looked pretty slick. Yeah, it was good.
Unfortunately for a lot of people, they were sucked into Tamalolo. What's going on with his Supercoach career? Todd Payton's just put it through the absolute ringer.
He has, but his minutes have been pretty good still. As much as we've looked at his output and seeing the scores and saying he's lost it and it's all the coach, his actual base stats have dropped. His points per minute have dropped as well. So whether
I think he's only lost 3 or 4 minutes a game. But it's what he's doing in those minutes that I think is the big troubling sign, as you touched on.
Yeah, I don't know whether it's a directive from the coach that he's not to have more runs than everyone else all the time, whether he wants the load spread more or something like that, because Tomalolo has been able to miss a few tackles late in the game and that sort of thing. And when he's having 250-meter run games when the next highest forward is running 110, then you can see why he's going to miss a tackle at the end of a game. So whether it's a directive from the coach saying, I want to spread that load a little bit more, I want you to be making sure that you're making your tackles and that sort of thing, I don't know.
I mean, it hasn't translated to winning footy either, so it's not like Todd Payton's reinvented the wheel here. If the Cowboys were on some big tear and they were coming fifth or sixth, you could potentially look at it, but they're still struggling. I mean, AJ going down last week, obviously one of the form centre wings of the Supercoach, a lot of people were struggling where to go. There was a fair bit of talk around Josh Adokar, a similar player playing on the left-hand side of a team that strikes well, that has a pretty low base but a high ceiling. You got 93 out of Adokar this week. Looks like a pretty solid replacement for AJ, the people that went that way.
Yeah, I'm all for it. This is the season for going for ceilings, and the Storm are scoring points for fun. So if you can get a winger that's playing on an edge for the Storm, you go for it.
Well, partnered up with Justin Olam as well, who's had a very, very good year. Maybe he hasn't translated to Supercoach all that well, but Justin Olam was playing some of the best footy I've seen him play the last couple of years. He pumped out a 68. Jerome Hughes, for some reason, I don't know if it's a mentality thing, but I just can't get around Jerome Hughes. Every time I look at getting him, it's the week that he goes like sub 30, but the weeks that I don't look at him, it's when he goes huge. You're a Hughes owner yourself, aren't you?
Yes, I do have Hughes, and I'm definitely a happy owner. I sold Sam Walker for Hughes. It was quite a while ago now. So, yeah, I've been pretty happy with that trade. It must have been before the first buy. Yeah, anyway, but yeah, I've been happy with that trade.
Probably some buy planning happening there.
Yeah, he's doing super well. That's right, because it was a choice between going up from Walker to Hughes or down from Walker to Burton like everyone else did. And I was going to be happier keeping Hughes for the season than I would have been keeping Burton for the season. So that's why
I have the exact same dilemma. I think I went Burton. I'm not upset with that. Every time I've played Burton, he's done well. I specifically remember the game for the follow-up week. He's got 130-odd, and that was nice. Obviously, didn't do too well this week, but I think if you went either way, Hughes probably was slightly better, but you have to work out whether the money tied up. Nico Hines, yep. Now this is probably the biggest talking point of the round. Ryan Pappenhausen came back in, didn't look great. What do you think happens with this Melbourne side? Do you think Bellamy just keeps what's been working?
I have absolutely no idea what he's going to do. I'm wondering whether they actually go with both Grant and a Papp or a Hines, whoever starts or doesn't start, on the bench. So one of the two of those utility players on the bench, and then Grant will come on after 20 minutes or so and play the last 60. And then Smith goes into the forward rotation, and then you've got the Papp and Hines flick around. They can play wherever they want to play, sort of thing. So if that happens, that's probably the best case Supercoach-wise for all of them, because they all still get a game.
Well, I think at this point of the season, if Hines does move to some kind of roaming centre role, you just keep him. I understand you're going to lose a lot of cash, but with the lack of trades people have and the fact that he can still put out an output of 85, look, I watched this game, it did look like Hines did a huge amount, but looks like he's kept the goal kicking as well, which is a big tick, as we touched on with Callum Ponga. That adds, for the Storm goal kicker, it adds even more. I would say it adds another 20 to 25 points with how many points they're putting up each week. They're averaging, 8-9 tries a game. So, yeah, I think that's huge, and Nico Hines is definitely not bad off the tee, so that's going to add a fair bit of points to him. And I think you just hold. And yeah, you understand that the price drop's coming, but yeah, I would just hold him.
Yeah, well, for now, until we find out definitively whether his role's going to change dramatically, if he goes back to that bench role and is playing 20 minutes, then look, you've just got to get rid of him.
Yeah, different story. But if he's gonna start at fullback, move into that Tom Trbojevic mold in Origin, just roam around, do whatever he wants. Yep. You just hold him and hope for the best. The Rabbitohs 60, the Warriors 22. When you see a side score 60 points, you expect a lot of them to have tons. There was one score of 99 and five scores over 100. Not a bad time to own and play Damien Cook, was it?
Yes, well, unfortunately, I was up against Addo in our head-to-heads, and he had Damien Cook, and I had Jaden Brayley.
Yes, of our always, it's, three unique that, players. That speaks for itself, really, that head-to-head matchup.
Yeah, that was literally the match gone. Everything else was pretty balanced. We only had three uniques. The other two uniques were even, and then Cook versus Brayley.
When you've only got three uniques and one of them scores 150, it's very, very hard to make up ground. We touched on the replacements for Tohu Harris. We brought up Ryan Madison. We've brought up Tyson Frizzell. And we talk about high ceiling, and there's definitely some big ceiling in Cam Murray.
Yeah, he's killing me. I can see the appeal, and he's very busy, but his role just changes so much. And he's the guy that gets shifted out wide. He's the one that will go and play center to go and plug a hole. It just scares me. I just can't pull the trigger on Cameron Murray.
It's one of those things. But I guess if you look at the base stats, him and Frizzell actually average the same in base. They both average 51, and Frizzell does pip him on averages by a point. That was pre this round, so that's going to change with Cam Murray's big score.
Of course,
but he does churn through work. But I know what you mean. That can definitely, all it takes is one injury. And Cam Murray shifts to the back row. Jai Arrow comes into the middle, and it just sort of throws everything out of whack.
Exactly.
Josh Mansell, look, not so much a classic, but if you have AJ in your draft teams, definitely a good handcuff. He pumped at 89 on that left-hand side. Mate, I haven't played a game of grade footy in about 5 years, but I think I could score a try on the left-hand side of that Parramatta team. You see all these big scores, though, and you look at Cody Walker's 84, and it's a little bit deflating, isn't it?
Yeah, well, if you can pick someone that's playing on the left wing for the Bunnies, then you're going to get points. It's as simple as that, really. The number of tries AJ has scored is crazy, but when you look at it, realistically, he's been untouched for 90% of them.
Oh, yeah, it's not an AJ masterclass. He's had some good put-downs and whatnot, put-downs that Mansell probably couldn't do. But it's not like AJ's created stuff for him. He's had a couple of nice try assists, but yeah, the actual tries themselves, they've been laid on by Cody Walker thick and thin.
Yeah, for sure. And watching Cody Walker swing from left to right to left to right is amazing. I love watching him play both edges. It's like he's playing the fullback role and Latrell's kind of just sitting out the back and waiting for something else to happen.
Yeah, it looks like Latrell is just sort of injecting himself when he wants to, similar to how he played in Origin. And I think Latrell's best asset is his ball playing. I think he's a phenomenal ball player, but he did do some pretty special things on the weekend. And look, it probably didn't translate as what we... If you watched that game, I thought Latrell would have gone huge. He did go 108, which is still very, very good. But it's one of those... I think it's a Clint Gustin effect. You look at him and think, oh, he must have gone massive. But he does chime in and out, and that is the problem. Yeah. Some weeks for Latrell, it's 108. The next, it's 18. So I guess that's the biggest thing for them.
Well, for the Warriors, when he comes in, he makes a difference. You notice him whenever he gets in the play, and that's why you always
feel like
he scores
when
more than he gets.
When he does chime himself in, you know something's going to happen.
Exactly.
But it's the problem of when he's going to do that. For the Warriors, mate, there isn't a whole lot here to talk about. Cody Nikorima got a 58. That was, I think, a pretty lucky 58. I think he chimed up in the middle with a line break.
Yeah.
But apart from that, it was pretty tough watching. Four Warriors fans, Adam Fennell-Blake, Matt Lodge didn't relive the form they showed last week. Adam Fennell-Blake looks like he could be out for the season, which is a huge blow for owners.
Yeah, well, it depends on what the injury is. I haven't seen any confirmation yet, but if it whatever happened, it broke the skin. So if it was just a dislocation that's broken the skin, then you're only looking at it a week or two. It's more about wound management and making sure it doesn't get infected and that sort of thing. But if there's a break, then you're looking at a lot longer, so the 4 to 8 week mark, which is pretty much the end of the season. So there'll be a few owners sweating on that news.
yeah, fingers crossed just for footy fans that it is only dislocation. Look, he's not highly owned, but he's in my side, and a lot of people are giving me shit for owning him and me putting them onto them. Reece Walsh, he's got a 34. But, I mean, look, Reece Walsh was never going to score fantastic against the Rabbitohs. You're bringing him in for the run they've got home. Apart from the Knights, I think the Warriors have the second best run home, and he's goal-kicking. I think when RTS comes back in, that's going to help him relieve a lot of pressure too. He did make a lot of errors based on kicking. I think Chad Townsend and Cody Nikorima both need to stand up and take more responsibility in the kicking role and not leave it on the shoulders of an 18-year-old. I'm not too worried as a Reece Walsh owner. Moving forward, I think he's got a pretty good role and a good chance to go huge. The Seagulls taking on the Tigers, 44-24. This was a bit of a letdown for Tom Trbojevic, wasn't it?
Oh, it was. We were all expecting a pretty big score from him. And look, in the past, any other year, if your captain got 87, then you're going, okay, I'm pretty satisfied with that. That's not too bad. But the way this year is and the way he's scoring this year, and then also watching Cherry Evans pump out a 172, it is a little bit underwhelming.
And yeah, Morgan Harver as well, big beneficiary, 141, sorry. You did touch on Tom Trbojevic, mate. It wasn't even 18 months ago that I would stick the captaincy on Payne Haas and just get 75 and be over the moon with that. Now,
yep,
as you said, Tom Trbojevic gets an 87, and we're all sitting there going, oh, like, it's a bit shit.
What's going on here?
Yeah, it's the standards that he set for himself, unfortunately. Josh Schuster, a guy that I never got behind just because I didn't like the fact that he was at 5'8". And I think at the time, I owned Connor Watson and I owned Matt Moylan when he sort of burst onto the scene. And both those guys were going fine. I never pulled the pin on Schuster, but a bit of a cult hero in the Supercoach world. And it was tough watching until he got the ball. Like, that was the obvious thing. He needed the ball to sort of create something out of nothing, and he did. 64, you got to be happy with that as an owner.
Yeah, 64 is a solid score. I was considering actually moving him on to Dewey at one point, but then with AJ being gone and who knows how long for and who knows how he comes back from his recovery, whether that impacts performance and that sort of thing. So I pulled the pin on AJ and went to Dewey that way. So I'll be holding Schuster for the moment. I've only got two trades left, so I may end up with Walker and Schuster at 5'8 for the rest of the year, and I might end up being stuck with just Turbo and Dewey at fullback, but we'll see how we go getting closer and see if I can save a couple of trades for some luxury fullback movement.
Yeah, definitely worse options with how good the Tigers draw coming home is.
Exactly.
Mate, I never got behind Hamwell Olakau'atu. I didn't really get into the hype. It was a lot of attacking stats, but he did pump out 49 with not really much happening for him, and he did pass the eye test again. Looked like he could have crashed over two or three times. If you own Hamwell, if you brought him in this week, I wouldn't be too discouraged by seeing that.
Yeah, look, I like watching him play. My only issue is that we've got Curtis Sironen around the corner. Now, as much as Olakau'atu has played really well and deserves his spot in that side, he's been phenomenal. He's been really damaging, scoring lots of tries, doing a great job.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
But Sironen has been there for a long time. He's the known quantity, and you know that he's going to get a role in that team somewhere. And I feel like Olakau'atu is probably better suited to playing a middle role than Sironen is. So
yeah, I said the exact same thing as you, mate. And a lot of people push back and saying that Hamwell should be starting over Curtis Sironen. I don't particularly agree. I support everything you say. I think Hamwell's a bigger body, more mobile, can probably do better things in the middle than Curtis Sironen could. Jason Saab, it's just, it's either rocks or diamonds, and I can never let him go. He's always in my 17, just because you hold on for that moment, and this week wasn't it.
Well, I'm a very happy seller before the first buy. Thank goodness, because if he survived that first buy, I would have been in the same situation as you and held on and held on and been disappointed week after week.
The problem is he's my fifth centre wing and AJ went down, so that means he's my fourth centre wing. And yeah, you just hope. I mean, I've posted the averages. He averages less than 20 without Turbo, and he averages over 65 with him. And you play the numbers game, you take the chance, but yeah, unfortunately this wasn't it. But I think that was because Turbo wasn't really firing. A lot of Turbo's points came from the one individual try that he had. So, yeah. I mean, for the Tigers, as a Tigers fan, there's very little to talk about here. Ken Mamalo got a double with a 76. Jacob Little looks very awkward in open space running. But yes. I'll let you talk about your man, Adam Dewey.
Yeah, look, I feel like the Tigers' run home is better than most. And Adam Dewey's the centre of everything that the Tigers do good. If the Tigers pull off a good play, Adam Dewey's the man that's behind it. And not only that, he's the goal kicker for the team. So
they're very good one in that too.
Yeah, he's doing really well with it. So they're scoring a lot of points. So he's kicking a lot of goals. And generally, if they're scoring points, he's the one that's putting them on. So I felt like he was a really easy trade-in for me this week as a guy I could hold for the rest of the season and just run home with him. Even if you get stuck at fullback, then I don't feel like I'm going to be losing out too much having him there compared to a Teddy. Like Dewey can pull out 140 just as well as Teddy can.
We saw the number one side in the comp struggle against the Cowboys. We saw the number two side struggle also against the Queensland team. The Panthers getting up 18-12 over the Broncos. Brian To'o, sensational. We know when he gets a try, it's 85+ with the base that he has. Viliami Kikau, a guy that I've never been sold on for Supercoach. He's very, very matchup dependent. 73, but a good performance from him. Stephen Crichton, 73. James Fisher-Harris, enormous with a 72. Pretty much all in base. They're going to miss him drastically, but they do get TPJ coming back in.
Yep.
And Dylan Edwards also with a 69. No real standouts here, but Brian To'o continues to do what he does best.
Yeah, well, I don't know many teams that don't have Brian To'o in them at the
I
moment,
didn't for a so. Week.
Yes, well, that wasn't intentional, was it?
Oh, I keep telling myself that to sleep at night, mate.
So, yeah, as much as it's good watching To'o get a big score, it's
not going to set you apart, is it?
Yeah, it doesn't set you apart from anyone. That's just keeping up. So, yeah, as much as it's nice to watch him go over for a try, it doesn't get me as excited as watching someone like Dewey score a try who's got about...
Yeah, more of that pod play.
Yeah,
we scroll all the way down to the bottom of the score sheet. We see Tyron May. We see Jerome Luai get a 33. What's happened to Luai?
Well, at the start of the year, it looked like Cleary and Luai were really balancing out their attack. So they were evenly spreading the use of the ball. And then it got to one point where Cleary just seemed to click and decided that he was the man and he was going to do it all. And he was playing both sides of the ruck and creating space on both sides. And Luai was just a fill-in in the middle. He was just a link man that wasn't getting the opportunities to do much creating. And now that Cleary's not there at all and he's playing with Tyron May, who is trying to play like Cleary and dominate the ball, which is stunting their attack a lot, it's not giving Luai a lot of opportunity. He really needs to take control of the whole side.
The one thing that I have noticed that is different in this Penrith side than other sides are. So, for example, you look at South Sydney, obviously a peak side for the left-hand side attack. Their tries are either scored by Cody Walker hitting Dan Gagai as a crash ball or hitting a cutout to AJ. Like, they're pretty much the only two players.
Yeah, and then and the sweep to Latrell.
Yeah, obviously the pick to Latrell as well. With this Penrith side, I think they're using Matt Burton. They're using his playmaking skills to the detriment of Jerome Luai. Luai's giving early ball to Burton and pretty much just saying, you make the space for Brian To'o. I think that's really hurting. That's really hurting Jerome Luai because he's not putting Burton through those holes for big attacking chances.
Yeah, that's a pretty fair assessment. I hadn't really looked at it like that they're using Burton almost as an extra half sitting out wider, which he is. He's playing like that, but he's also playing as a really good centre. He's running really good lines and scoring a lot of tries himself as well. So, yeah, it's just a matter of there's so many good attacking options for the whole side that it's just got to spread out a little bit and Luai's suffering.
I didn't start with Luai. I started with Watson and Moylan. I decided to go cheap in the 5/8 because I didn't really want to spend the cash. And then I think It may have been Watson, I want to say. He peaked. I think he was about 500K. And I think Luai had three scores of 80 and looked to be clicking with Cleary, as you said. And I brought Luai in about 660K.
Yeah.
And he's worth less than 350 now. I mean, good price for next year if you want to go there, but it's tough watching.
Yeah, well, there was another point there where I think Cody Walker had his really bad score against Melbourne, which is right around when it looked like Luai was going to be the gun 5/8 going forward. And
he just burst onto the scene out of nowhere, Luai.
Yeah.
Not out of nowhere, because we saw what he did last year, but the talk all preseason was do you go Munster or do you go Walker?
And exactly.
Munster had an average of 80, didn't really dip below 65, didn't go above 100. So he was very, very consistent, whereas Walker would fluctuate. And then, yeah, as you said, it just seemed like Luai just put four or five scores on the bounce. And I remember Costa having him, and that propelled him up the leaderboard. And, everyone else jumped on, and it's just gone downhill ever since.
Yeah, exactly. And look, I was lucky that I held off doing that Cody Walker to Luai trade, and Cody Walker's been pretty well killing it ever since. So that was one saving grace. But I've had Schuster sitting there since his first game. As soon as he was named, I brought him in because I'd seen enough from him in the past, knowing that he was a talented player and I enjoyed watching him and he was cheap. And he's served me well while he's been playing. Missing the bye did hurt.
I haven't got much right this year in terms of trades. Brought in a couple of duds and whatnot. But one thing I'll hang my hat on is I was a very, very loud advocate of bringing in Pangharss in early. The week before the bye round, when Lodge left, TPJ was suspended. A lot of people said wait on Haas. I could get behind that, but I went early on him. I think he scored 92 or 93 that game, backed up after the bye with an 85, and then again with 106 this week. Payne Haas is simply brilliant when he is told to just go forward and then have no one else around him. This is what Tamalolo owners want him to be.
Yeah, exactly. He's absolutely going beast mode. That's 3 weeks in a row with attacking stats and playing good minutes and dominating. And look, with their pack, they don't have much left. And I think even Flegler's going to be in trouble after his high shot this week. So there's going to be an even weaker pack. So he's probably going to be playing 70 minutes plus. So if you've got him, you're absolutely stoked right now. You've likely bought him at a near bottom dollar price and he's pumping out massive scores. But then again, if you're sitting there with a couple of front rowers that are doing decent, it's still probably not worth the trade.
No, that's the thing. I think I had someone go down. I can't remember. I may have had an injury or no, I think I sold him for TPJ. After TPJ went down for 3 weeks, I moved some jewels around and got Haas in for about 450. But yeah, I agree with you. If your front rowers are Christian Welch and another stock standard 60 point average, like, yeah, I don't think it's worth the trade considering how little people have four trades. There's a couple of outlier scores here. Jordan Rickey, Kobe Hetherington, Thomas Flegler. There's not a whole lot else to talk about, but Payne Haas was the star of the show. Fast forward to preseason next year. We start with Payne Haas again?
Starting with Payne Haas?
Yeah.
Maybe, but not necessarily. It'll depend how they structure their team to start the year and prices, and also depends on we've also heard some rumours that there's going to be some big changes to the structure of Supercoach. So, yeah, look, I don't have Payne Haas penciled in as a must to start the year yet, but he definitely could be.
Yeah, I think the scoring needs to maybe be looked at as well. Like, we saw Teddy last year average, 92? I think he averaged 92, and people lost their mind about how good that was. And
yeah,
we see Turbo averaging, 130, Cleary averaging 120. And the front rowers, and like, for example, this is a gripe that I've always had. Like, don't get me wrong, I own AJ. It's fantastic to see him score a bunch of tries, get a lot of points. But Payne Haas can bust his ass for 80 minutes a game and get 75. AJ can do nothing for two players and get 70, you know?
Yeah, I know. And it's annoying.
It is. Like, it just doesn't reward picking up these prop forwards. Like, mate, you're a fantasy player from many years. I've been a fantasy player for years on end. Like, we remember the days of, like, Lafranchi, Robbie Farah, Corey Parker, Paul Gallen. Like, these guys were the staples of Supercoach teams.
Yeah, even more recently, looking at guys like Sergis and SBW.
Yeah. It's obviously, like, I love Supercoach. I'll always love it. But I do think we need to balance out the field just a little bit. I mean, it's pretty taking these guys, especially with the rule changes as well. Like, if teams are going to be putting up 30, 40 points a game, you've got to take the ceiling. Like, don't get me wrong, I understand people have to go with the high scoring players, but what reward is there for, I guess, big minute forwards?
Yeah, well, like you said, the attacking stats are all being heavily skewed at the moment towards them. And look, like I said, I think the rules are all going to get a bit of a shake up next year, and there's going to be a few kind of ways to balance that out, I think. I don't have any actual idea of what they're going to do, but I feel that they'll try and balance that out a little bit and bring some of the base players back into the game a little bit. But then
a very, very interesting offseason, I think. Mate, we talk about big minute forwards, and when Dave Fafita was named on the bench, I wasn't too concerned. I'll be honest, I wasn't worried. I thought it's just going to be a case of the Connor Watson syndrome, come on after 20 and just play the rest of the game, and he did, and it was phenomenal. Pre-updates, 109. This is the Fafita we know and love.
Yeah, he was named on the bench, and look, we all know that he was likely to come on after 25 minutes and play the rest of the game. And the reality of it is that he's only really active in about 30 minutes of an 80-minute game anyway. So he gets most of his points in a short little window and then maybe one other short little window. And the rest of the game, he's a passenger. So him starting off the bench doesn't impact him too much. It obviously limits his potential to go 150-plus. But he's just such a beast. And he looked right at home on that right side today, which was interesting.
Hindsight is a very, very wonderful thing, but I was very, very vocal about not picking up Tino Fa'asau Malawi all preseason. I was just like, Melbourne system, don't buy into it, blah, blah, blah. And then I saw him tear it up in the final trial game. I was like, this is it. We're getting Tino. And I wish I stuck to my guns and kept Fafita, because that hurt. You remember that game. The trial game, he killed it. It was against the Warriors. I was like, sweet, yep, we're on here. He's just pushing up through the middle. This would be fantastic. But he's been a little bit of a flop this year, hasn't he? Considering the hype that he had.
Oh, for sure. He's definitely been lower than what everyone was expecting from him. He's had those moments where he's pulled out some brilliant plays and that sort of thing. But in general, you would expect that most people would be disappointed if they were owners. In terms of like draft teams or whatever, you would be having him sitting in the front row, not in the back row. So again, someone who's pumping out 50 to 60, you're probably not too disappointed with. But in terms of classic, you want a bit more out of someone that you've paid good coin for.
How happy would Greg Marzio owners be now? Seeing him come back and put out a 65. Greg Marzio was the guy that I remember we were hyping up about 2017, 2018. I remember every preseason podcast, every preseason team always had Greg Marzio, and it never really materialized, but I'm so glad he's playing footy now. I'm not an owner. I wish I was, but for a guy that is so near and dear to Supercoach's hearts, it's very good to see him play good footy.
Isn't it annoying that all of these rookie guys come in when it's not really helpful to buy them?
Mate, I am the number one ticket holder for the Dominic Young fan club. But the problem is he wasn't relevant until like round 16, and by that stage it's too late.
Yeah, 100%. And in terms of Marzio, everyone's been waiting years and years for him to come in. Everyone knows that he's a tackle buster. Everyone knows he's a try scorer. Everyone knows that he has a lot of base stats. And it's just been, I can't believe it's taken this long for him to actually get a run in first grade. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's like I said, it sucks that his price will probably be too inflated to grab next year. He'll be over like 350, 400K easily.
Yeah,
and that's just
sure.
too much to be picking up on him. I'd much rather look at someone like a Billy Smith for that sort of moderately experienced NRL player. But unfortunately for Marzio,
That injured score and his not having played 7 games will be very handy for his price for next year. He'll be
definitely
priced around like the Charlie Staines mark. Hopefully he can perform better than Staines did to start next year.
Hopefully. Mate, we talk about fullbacks. You mentioned Charlie Staines there. A guy that, when Turbo went down in the preseason, obviously very, very close around one, he went down, was out for 4 weeks. I was very, very keen on AJ Brimson, averaged 77 or something coming home last year when the Titans put on that massive spell. Oh, geez, AJ Brimson's been underwhelming, hasn't he?
I had AJ for the run home last year as my reserve 5'8", and every single week it was a matter of, do I pick him? Do I not pick him? And I picked him every week, and he went really well every week. And I luckily didn't buy into that run home to start this year. So I managed to avoid him at the start. I did consider it. And I was very heavily considering him in a few of my draft picks as well, but managed to avoid
I dropped the 13th pick on AJ.
Pardon, sorry?
I dropped round 2, pick 4, whatever it was, or round 2, pick 5. So yeah, the 13th overall pick I dropped on AJ.
That hurts.
Brutal. I mean, I managed to flip him for a decent trade. I think I had... I put on the table Ryan Sutton, Mitch Moses, Fita Pango Jr. and AJ Brimson. I got back Cleary, so that worked out well. But to bomb your second round pick on AJ, and that was the point I wanted to make. Like, he's just been not there and underwhelming, considering how highly hyped this Titan side was.
Yeah, well, one of my drafts, I had Ponga and Appy as my 1 and 2 picks. So you can imagine where I'm sitting on that ladder.
After his debut, scored 89. We're talking about Matt Fiege here. He backed up with a 64. I can't pick the two apart between Matt and Max. There was a lot of talk all preseason about both these guys getting some game time, and it hasn't really materialized. They've sort of fluctuated in and out. 64 from him, 64 from Matt Dufty, 60 from Jack DeBell. None of these guys are overly classic relevant. But I guess the big classic relevant name here, Ben Hunt, scored a try with a line break, gets 48. You're not too happy about that, are you?
Yeah, if you owned Ben Hunt, you'd be disappointed only getting 48 with a try line break. But, and particularly against the Gold Coast, whose defence is very leaky, I would look at them as one of the worst defence organisations in the comp at the moment. They've been that bad. And for Ben Hunt, who's the organiser, to only get a 48 with a try is definitely surprising. But, you'll take it. You'll take a 48. When you've been beaten 32-10.
The problem that masks Ben Hunt is the fact that he is hooker eligible. We wouldn't be talking about him at all, would we, if he was just a strict halfback?
No. Well, you've got... Obviously, there'll be people holding Cleary. You're going to have people with SJ. You're going to have people with Jerome Hughes. You're going to have people with Sam Walker. And
jump on the DCE trainers now as well this week.
And that's the most popular trade-in next week at 770K will be DCE.
Look... Yeah, great run home, but I just can't, unfortunately, because I know how reliant Turbo is on that team. So
the problem with DCE next week,
Cherry Evans, but yeah, Hunt, if he didn't have the hook eligibility, you move on. 40 whatever it was with a try line break is not great. We touch on front row forwards that have big upside. He was touted as the best front row in the world when he came over here. Didn't have a preseason. Uh-huh. Was very homesick during the middle of the COVID breach. We didn't see the best out of Luke Thompson. We saw the best out of him with no Josh Jackson. Josh Jackson came back into the side. His scores dipped to around 50, 55. I wasn't impressed. And then, put on a masterclass today with 113. With a sin bin as well, mind you.
I lost 2 head-to-heads by less than 20 points by people that owned Luke Thompson. I'm absolutely filthy that he's pulled out 113 with a sin bin. And
10 minutes
off
the field as well. Like, it's just, yeah.
Yeah, and both of those comps are cash comps, and it's getting tight and nitty-gritty, and then bang, Luke Thompson comes out and knocks out 113.
That's why we love Supercoach, mate, because he scores 50s for the last 5 weeks and then just pumps out this when you need him to do it the least. I had a follower. I don't have his name on me, unfortunately. Shout out to you, though, if you are listening. He said, just sending you this message, mate, when Luke Thompson scores a double and gets 120. And I replied with, just sending you this, mate, when Luke Thompson gets 45 and your dreams are ruined. And when he got sent off, when he got sin binned, I was like, sweet. And then, absolutely towered it up and put the Bulldogs back into this game. They were down 30-6 at half time, and they put on 3 pretty quick tries, actually. And then the Sharks did run away with it in the end with Sean Johnson going down. That's something I want to touch on, mate.
Yeah.
A lot of teams are going to own SJ. A lot of teams are going to own AJ. A lot of teams are going to own Tohu. With very, very little trades up their sleeve, it's tough times.
It is tough times, and it's one of those things where if you're considering trying to get Cleary back at some point, then you've probably got to hold SJ for a little bit and use potentially 2 trades just to generate cash to bump SJ up, because it's just going down in price.
Mate, when Cleary went down, I was very, very firm on the trade train that if you trade Cleary out, you do not get him back in, because it's going to cost you 3 trades. It's going to cost you 2 to get the cash and 1 to sort of nuff someone out. Like, it's just, for what the cash is, $1.1 million, it's such an exorbitant amount of money that I feel if you did pull the trigger to boost your team, you can't go Cleary again, in my opinion.
The one saving grace is the fact that if he plays next week, it's against the Storm, and he'll have a over 200 break even. So say he scores a 50, that's going to take 120K off his price, which will make him about 940. And then you'll have another massive break even the week after that, probably pushing 250 even. And then you're probably looking in the 800. So you're probably only going to need 450K to go from Johnson to Cleary. Yeah, but
we're talking about round 22 here. And with the amount of injuries that people have, like surely like they just don't have the flexibility to get him back in.
Well, this is not something that I can do with two trades left. That's not going to happen. But if you're someone who's got five plus trades, then it's definitely something you can think about.
A lot of people that follow me are quite new to Supercoach. When I was pounding the Sifa Talakai drum when he came back into the side, a lot of people messaged me being like, oh, what's the hype around this guy, blah, blah, blah. He's a dud, he's a flop, whatever. But this is the Talakai that we know and love, the big ball-running, hole-hitting, just beast of a man.
Yeah, he had a big game. 8 tackle busts, line break try, offload, 18 hit-ups. He was in beast mode today.
It's very different to the 25 points a game that we saw from him playing through the middle when he was back into the side. Look, he is a spot defender. He did concede a try today as well. Like, defense isn't his strong point, don't get me wrong, but
yep.
for the attacking upside that he possesses, I really like him. The Sharks have an okay run home. Unfortunately, though, Sean Johnson, like, that's a big negative. If you don't own him, don't get him back in, obviously. But if you do own him, I would hold tight on Talakai.
Yeah, well, you'll get a few price rises out of him now anyway. And look, the reality is that he got that spot because Teague Wilton did his hamstring at training throughout the week.
Yeah, 2 to 4 weeks for Teague Wilton as well. So that's
you're going to have a couple of weeks where he's likely to be playing that edge role. And they've got a decent run going forward. So yeah, if you've got him, you're definitely not trading him out. They've got Manly next week, which is going to be a tough game. So you likely bench him next week, but then you've got the Warriors who are just decimated at the moment, followed by Knights, Tigers, Broncos before.
Not a bad little run home if you ask if Talakai, mate. We've been going for nearly 50 minutes now, so I will let you head back to your humble abode. I thank you very much for coming on, wrapping up the round. It was a pretty big round, a lot of stuff happening, and I think a lot of teams will be scratching their heads come lockout what to do with the very minimal trades they have.
Yeah, 100%. The big advice is if you can save a trade, save a trade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.